focusing on disease control over care, I think, really weakened the epidemic.
Dr. Paul Farmer, author of the new book, Fevers, Feuds, and Diamonds, Ebola and the Ravages of History. He's chair of global health and social medicine at Harvard Medical School, co-founder and chief strategist of Partners in Health, also featured in the documentary Bending the Arc. That does it for today's show. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Libby Rainey, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Tarasena, Carla Wills, Tammy Warrenoff, Jarena Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamaria Studio, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Hani Massoud, and Adriano Contreras. Our general manager is Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Miriam Barnard, Paul Powell, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, Hugh Grant, Dennis Moynihan, Aaron Dooley, David Prude, and Dennis McCormick. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
Portland.
Have you gotten your flu shot? It's never too late to protect yourself, your family, and your community against the flu. This year, it is more important than ever. Black and African Americans, people of color, pregnant people, people without health insurance or a regular health care provider, people with pre-existing conditions like asthma, diabetes, and cardiovascular disease, and people 65 and older are encouraged to get a flu shot. Multnomah County Health Department and Portland Community College are hosting a free weekly drive-through flu vaccine and COVID-19 testing clinic that will be held every Wednesday from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. until March 31, 2021, at PCC's Cascade Campus, Parking Lot 1, located at 701 North Jessup Street in Portland. Entrance is on North Albina Street. You can drive through, bike through, or walk up to. To reserve an appointment for a flu shot or COVID test, call 503-988-8939. That's 503-988-8939. This campaign is a project of the Racial and Ethnic Approaches to Community Health and the Communicable Disease Services programs. It is made possible with funding from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Public Service Announcements.
This is KBOO Portland. It's 8:01 a.m. It's Friday. Mind the gap, because we're going to bridge it, because girls are powerful. Stay tuned. Your Community Connection.
Hello, how's it going? Happy New Year, universe, galaxies, United States, Portland, Oregon, and everything in between. How are you? This is The Gap on KBOO Portland. I'm Tammy. On the line with me is the one and only Althea. How's it going?
Hello, happy New Year.
Yay, we are here. And in the studio, of course, is Sonia, keeping us on the airwaves. Thank you so much, Sonia. How are you? Happy New Year.
Oh, you're welcome, and happier at least New Year to you, and to, I believe, and to our guest this morning, who is, or am I jumping the gun?
You are jumping the gun, but that is okay. Happy New Year to all, to alls and alls, as you just said. It's great to be back on the air. We were not here last week, but we do have a episode online if anyone is interested in checking that one out on kboo.fm. But it is, yeah, it's 1/1/21, and I'm sure there's some sort of esoteric meaning behind it. But for now, we can officially say that we're here. We're here. I just, you know, a round of applause for all of you, all of us, as they say. So I'm thrilled. Everyone seems to be very uplifted about this new year also. So I'm just, you know, riding the high of everyone else's positivity. That's where I'm at. Althea, you got any gems to add to that?
No, I mean, I second it, you know. I think both of us are aware of, like, I don't want to be, like, do the toxic positivity thing and pretend like now everything's fine, because it's not. But, you know, we can be excited and grateful that we made it this far, and that 2020, a uniquely challenging year, is behind us, and we made it. And it's a different year, and we can have different energy, you know. Mm-hmm. It's been such, like, a slog of, like, wow, things keep going from bad to worse, and boy, do I wish there was an end in sight.
And here it is. You asked.
And here it is.
We brought.
Yep. And we created the new year. You're welcome, by the way.
Yeah, you're welcome.
made some calls.
Like you said, though, with the, you know, some things, you know, getting from bad to worse. But there were a lot of a lot of people that were diligently working on the ground to make our lives better, and have been before. Mm. All of this stuff happened, and by this stuff I mean, like, you know, as they call it, eloquently called it, the dumpster fire of 2020. Mm. But there have been a lot of people on the ground working. As we saw in November, a bunch of measures got passed that were pretty, I mean, some of them were historic, I gotta say. Mm-hmm. And we actually have someone on the line, our special guest, Nat, is organizer for preschool. So we're going to talk about the Preschool for All measure that was passed recently. Nat works with helped create a group called PDX Child Care Labor Alliance, which is for early educators, preschool infants, toddler teachers, nannies, and other child care workers. So we're going to hear her, and I'm super excited, super stoked, because Althea, like you said, it's been a rough year, but there have been a lot of people working it, truly working it, and kind of changing the world, changing our city. And I'm super humbled to have Nat on the line with us. Hopefully you are there.
I'm here.
Oh, there we are. How's it going, Nat?
Good. Can you hear me all right?
Yep, we hear you perfectly.
Excellent. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Thank you so much for joining us. I hope that intro was descriptive enough, but if you could, in your own words, give a short intro as to what you've been doing, and just kind of, you know, let us get to know you a tad bit.
Yeah. So, like Tammy said, some friends and I started an organization called the PDX Child Care Labor Alliance, and that's been a really cool catch-all for all different types of child care workers to organize together and support each other. And it came out of a couple things. One, that over the past couple years, the preschool I was working at and am still supporting now, called Growing Seeds. We were able to start a Growing Seeds workers union there for those three preschools, and that was just a huge accomplishment, because preschools are private preschools are almost never have workers unions, and it's been great to see interest grow in that, and more childcare workers realize the value of their labor and that they could organize and that they could have their needs met. And so, yeah, that's been great, great work, and really inspiring, and it keeps going. But also the Preschool for All measure that just passed in Multnomah County, that is going to give free preschool to all kids in the county as it rolls out. Being involved in that with the was the Universal Preschool Now campaign. That was also part of what precipitated the Labor Alliance starting, because worker voices were really crucial in writing the Universal Preschool measure. But we can get more into what happened with that later. But to explain who I am and where I'm coming from, I'm a child care worker, early childhood educator, who has been organizing my labor and the labor of my fellow workers.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much, Nat. So many questions, and I know that both Sonia also has a couple of questions for you. But I was wondering, I didn't even know that, I know that there were teachers unions, and I didn't realize that preschools don't count as, they don't fall under that same category. There's some sort of, I don't want to say necessarily discrimination, because I'm not sure if that is the word, but what is it that, that's kind of been stopping the general teachers union from absorbing preschool teachers, or kind of like, being protected under the general teachers union umbrella?
Yeah. So when my coworkers and I started organizing 2 years ago to start our union for the preschool, I say a preschool, but it's also, there's also infant toddler age kids. So it's a, I guess you could call it a preschool. It's also like a early childhood education center. But anyway, kids 0 to 6 years old, all the wording of it is hard to find, but I'm going to call it a preschool, just keep it short. Anyway, so my coworkers and I were going to classes and workshops to learn more about workplace organizing. And we were also trying to talk to parent unions, and try to find any other private preschools or childcare centers that were unionized. And we couldn't find any precedent to look to. Teachers unions were like, we're not sure if we can help you. Preschool teachers have totally different needs than, K through 12 teachers. A contract wouldn't meet the same needs. And also it's just this uncharted territory. But then there's also the fact that because preschool is not publicly funded, and there just isn't that infrastructure for it in the U.S., there really aren't a lot of public preschools. So the way that teachers unions for public schools in the U.S., or at least here, are kind of a given, there are some Head Start and other low-income funded childcare programs, those sometimes have unions, but so many preschools have to be private because of the money issue, that were basically never unionized. And, and private K-12 often, most often is not unionized either. So it kind of falls in that. But yeah, it really comes down to how inaccessible preschool is. That means, it has to be private, and it's hard to organize, and there's no roadmap for it.
Gotcha. That's interesting. I'd really, could you maybe for 1 second, if you know the history as to why there is that split off or that splinter? Under what stipulation would preschools not be publicly funded? What would be the reason for that? What would the go for it? So go ahead.
That's a great question. I would love for someone in charge to give me a good answer, because the rhetoric we used for the Universal Preschool and Preschool for All campaigns was really trying to make people understand how important early education is, and because it's not funded the way K-12 education is, I think that creates this vicious cycle where it becomes devalued. If it was funded, it would be much more like seen as legitimate and valued. And also if it was seen as more legitimate, maybe it would be funded more. So it's just this terrible cycle there. But also, I mean, just the way it is in the U.S., there's almost no, I believe Oklahoma has universal preschool for 4 and 5 year olds. So, and I'm 99% sure on that, that all of Oklahoma, your kids, 4 and 5, they have preschool, high quality early education. And somewhere in New York also, they have that. But it's seen as like a really revolutionary thing to have universal preschool. And in other countries, it's normal. Not every other country, but some other countries it's normal, but the same as, you know, the way healthcare for all seems so radical in the U.S., so does universal preschool. But yeah, preschool teachers are low-wage workers who work in really terrible and undercompensated conditions.
Thank you, Nat. Althea, I know you have a question.
Yeah, I'm wondering if you can speak to that a little bit more about, you mentioned that there are unique needs for early childhood educators that a union could address, you know, being specifically targeted at that group. Can you speak to a little bit what those kinds of needs are?
Sure. Yeah, off the top of my head, you know, one thing is that the education structure is really different. You know, K through 12, you can have one dedicated teacher for a classroom who can build curriculum, be responsible for those kids, and then the other ages, like, you know, kids can like get themselves to classes. You can have different teachers for different subjects and whatever. But with early education, you know, with the ratios you have, oftentimes in a preschool classroom, it's 3 and 5 year olds, you'll have 20 kids smashed in there and you need 2 teachers for 20 kids. And it's really like, and then the younger kids, the ratios go from like 1 to 4 to 1 to 5. So it takes a lot more teachers, and it's really intensive work. Like, you can't look away for a moment, and you have to cycle people. Like, it's important to have really quality support teachers as well as your like central classroom teachers, and it's just like there's a lot more. It's more people heavy, and the needs of each age group just vary widely. And then there's all these different educational philosophies that early education requires. And it's also a lot more movement heavy. And a lot of it is, a lot of the work is, you know, kids learning how to, you know, move their bodies for the first time and to eat and it's like relationship building. You know, it's just like when you look at early education versus K through 12, the education, like what the education is just so different. I feel like I could go on a really big tangent on that. But yeah, I think it really comes down to the structure of the classroom and the type of learning and the type of curriculum, as well as like family engagement.
And you also mentioned do you want to say something here, Tammy?
I was going to say that's so, you know, hearing that, it blows my mind that, you know, you have these, you know, these little baby humans, you know, at such a tender age where they, you know, the type of interaction and the, like you mentioned, it's a very important word, the quality of interaction that they have is so important. And yet these teachers are not being protected or supported in a way that's you know, in the proper way that they need in order to provide this type of quality care for such a tender, it's such a vulnerable little thing, and it's you know, a baby human, and it's just I don't understand the disconnect between why I mean, teachers in general, why they aren't, you know, being, you know, getting a livable wage or maybe beyond that even. But for such an intensive type of, you know, environment for preschool and you know, early childhood development, I just don't understand why you did have to fight so hard, you know, and organize for 2 years in order to get, you know, using your words, almost legitimacy, you know. Yeah, just kind of blows my mind, and it must be really difficult. Elsie, I know you had a question, if you want to go ahead and ask it.
Well, yeah, I'm curious about, you know, it seems that organizing early childhood educators might be kind of a unique situation because there is this other party, right? Like, it's not just you and management. There's also interests of the client, and parents can be and often are very vocal. What was the response from the parents at the preschool that you worked at, or how did you navigate that?
Yeah, great question. Yeah, it is interesting. You know, yeah, thinking about the challenges that that workers in different fields have in organizing, how, you know, the clients or the stakeholders can look wildly different. And for us, yeah, it's these families, these parents who, you know, they're like precious kids, you know, whole like lifestyles are shaped by what happens at these schools. And, you know, I'll say for us in the school, at Growing Seeds, the school we organize, it's a school with a really strong, like social justice, like focus. You know, I mean, I do with that what you will, but that's a value that the school, talks about a lot. And so these parents, really, I think, had a much more idyllic picture of what was happening before workers started to speak out about what was, you know, what it was really like to work there and what they were really dealing with. So as we were organizing and preparing to go public with our union, because oftentimes when you're in the beginning stages of a union, it's something the workers talk about among themselves. You're not talking to management about it. You're not talking to families about it. It's important that you get your ducks in a row before you go public. So we were like, it's very important that we engage with the parents on this and that they understand why this organizing and unionizing is actually in their best interest, because we know that they're going to have fear come up that's like, will this make, you know, my childcare even less affordable than it is? Is this going to create a hostile environment where my child is? You know, are they just going to be in like the crossfire? You know, we just tried to play through all these different concerns that parents might have. And so what we were ready with when we went public is we planned this pizza party for the weekend after, where we had that whole week leading up to it, after we went public, we had workers coming to work early, standing on the sidewalk outside, handing flyers out to the parents for the pizza party. And so it was that weekend, Mississippi Pizza, shout out. We had the whole place. It was just packed with families and kids. And we had, you know, a teacher doing live music, and we had made a little photo booth, and had activities for the kids. And it was like this, and obviously this was pre-COVID, and it was this really cool opportunity for families to, outside of school, ask us any questions they had. You know, they could buy little like onesies screen printed with our logo and whatever. And so I thought that was just such a brilliant idea that was put together, and that parents not only got to see through the fear, but we got to be really clear with them why we thought unionizing benefited them, and let them know that their kids and their families were like a really big priority to us. That's why people work in this field, because, you know, we care. I lost my train of thought there. But yeah, they got to have all the information, and they could spread the word to other families. And like each parent that we connected with became like a spokesperson basically to other parents to let them know why they could support this. And in the end, the parent support made all the difference.
That sounds beautiful. I'm just imagining right now in my head, and I'm like, oh, that's just, you know, that type of work working together. Thank you so much, Nat. And I just wanted to let people who may just now be tuning in, you're listening to KBOO Portland. This is The Gap. I'm Tammy. On the line with me is my co-host, and I'd say getting pretty close to being best friend, Althea Billings. And in the studio is Sonia, our sound engineer and also co-host. And our guest today is Nat, and we're talking about unionizing at the preschool level, preschool for all, and the work that you've been doing. So thank you so much, Nat, for being here. Sonia, I wanted to see if you had any questions for Nat.
Yeah, I've heard a couple of things. You've said a couple of things, Nat, about that kind of touch on the rationale for preschool teachers not being covered by the, say, the National Educators Association and other teachers' unions. And you mentioned something about the contracts for, say, the public K through 12 teachers would not meet the needs of pre-K, preschool educators and staff. I wonder if you could just kind of tie it all together, bring it all into one, kind of break it all down. Well, maybe not break it all down, but tie it all up. Summarize all of that into one thing for us. Like the rationale for preschool educators and other staff not being covered by already existing teachers' unions.
Yeah. It's like a puzzle. We'll say we love teachers' unions. We had a lot of support from teachers' unions when we went public and other organizations. We love K through 12 teachers. The needs of, you know, kids up to five versus, you know, kindergarten and up just are different. The regulations that that, you know, affect like the ratios of how many teachers the kids, all kinds of things, the cost and structure, like they just are different environments, and so a lot of things just aren't applicable. There's different, like there's just different things that are developmentally appropriate for these kids. Let me think about it. Yeah, it's just a really different world, and so are the workers at Growing Seeds, for example, who have been bargaining for our first contract. The contract that they have negotiated, and it's all almost done. This first contract, we think, the contract they've negotiated just looks completely different than a elementary school teacher's contract would need to look, but that contract is going to be able to be used as a model for other schools that might unionize. And so Growing Seeds is organized under ILWU Local 5, which is also the union that represents Powell's workers and Oregon Historical Society, et cetera. It's kind of eclectic, but other schools can organize with us under ILWU Local 5 and you know, can benefit from what we've done. But it really is like a new map. So I'm not sure how to answer that question more specifically.
Tammy here, I have a quick question for you. You mentioned that you started organizing around 2 years ago, and if I am right with time and my memory, which sometimes don't sync up properly, that was around the time that Burgerville was unionizing. And unlike Burgerville, which, you know, have some sort of model of blueprint that they could apply for their situation, y'all didn't. So what was it like kind of like being, you know, the group that kind of like, you know, created the model? What were some of the challenges and how do you see it being applied moving forward?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Shout out to Burgerville workers. Love them. I feel like fast food unions are also really uncommon, and they were really in uncharted territory as well. But I'm not sure. I mean, there's been this wave of worker organizing in Portland that I think is really special to be a part of. And it's nice that we can all support each other and come out in solidarity with each other and come to each other's rallies and stuff like that. Obviously, the COVID crisis has really complicated what that looks like. But yeah, it's really cool to kind of trailblaze a little bit and, you know, create a situation where other workers are like, oh, I could do that, you know? And I think, yeah, do you want to ask that question more specifically, or did I answer?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I was just wondering what were kind of the challenges that you saw as, you know, a body that was just unionizing for the first time with a little bit of, or not a lot of, you know, blueprint or a model to follow.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. We had no idea what we were doing, and we're just grasping for like, you know, morsels of information or mentorship, like anywhere we could find it. And we made a lot of interesting mistakes, and we learned a lot, and it developed just this amazing camaraderie in the workplace where people just became so close, and it made the work, it made like the quality of our work better, our workplace cohesion better. It made people stay. Like, this is it's a field where there's so much turnover. It's like one of the biggest problems with early education is people have to leave because the work doesn't meet their basic living needs. And it causes this huge disruption in kids' education and in like families' experiences and whatnot. And for other coworkers, it causes a huge problem. So people who were going to leave, workers stayed, who were like, I believe in this union and what we're working on, you know, not going to go. And it was just so fun. It was like, it was almost like being in like this like high school like treehouse thing. I don't know. It was a really awesome experience. And it was scary. And you know, your job is on the line, and you're having these vulnerable conversations with people who are worried about their livelihoods and, you know, having to put themselves on the line to be in support of this union or have these secret conversations with other people. But we went to classes, like labor notes classes, that actually the local, like Portland DSA, puts together a lot of really cool workshops to help people organize. So that's a cool place to look. Labor notes training, sometimes through DSA Portland. Yeah, I don't know. We just really did whatever.
Yeah.
And ILW Local 5, our parent union, people from there gave us so much mentorship and just infinite time and patience. And now we're all set up really well to support other workers who might organize. It was really, really, really hard, but super rewarding. And I believe that people can do it.
That's very insightful. I hope that there's some shop stewards listening out there that might be feeling a little inspired. Yeah, Sophia, any questions?
Yeah, one thing that was touched on early on was, you know, in your pitch and getting parents on board, in, you know, now exporting it to other early childhood education institutions to get people to unionize, part of that pitch is the value of a preschool or early childhood education for students and for people going forward. We touched on it, we didn't quite go into it. What is so crucial about early childhood education?
Yes. There is so much. So kind of like, I mean, like Tammy mentioned before, like these are small humans at this really like precious and vulnerable and like possibility filled parts of their lives. I think people don't take kids seriously, and I think people don't take you know, women's work, you know, seriously. But kids are such full, like complex, dynamic people who just at that age in their lives are just having all these extremely significant interactions and breakthroughs, and the kinds of relationships and interpersonal skills, and I mean different types of learning that kids do at this age, you know, well, studies show, but you know, do with that what you will, that it is just such a crucial time for development, and that quality early education has effects that, you know, last a person's whole life. Rhetoric that had to come up a lot with the Universal Preschool Now and Preschool for All campaigns was really hitting hard on that, like what the benefits are for, you know, society at large, or like economists say for every dollar you put into early education, it's like, you know, this huge amount of money back into the economy, you know. So there's like a lot of research and different views about what the long-term effects in society of kids having access to early education is. But yeah, I would say, speaking for myself and what I see, it's just the day-to-day experiences of just huge expansive learning that can happen. And you know, preschool teachers they're skilled workers. It's really difficult work, and you know, yeah, just shout out to all preschool teachers and early educators. Like, the work that people do is just so impactful and skilled.
We are running out of time. I just wanted to ask a few more questions if I could before we let you go. Obviously 2020 has been as the greatest minds of our generations are calling, dumpster fire. How has COVID affected your work as an organizer specifically for this type of work? If you could just like sum it up, I'm sure there's been a lot of different ways, but mostly if you could emphasize on how you see it moving forward, as far as, you know, now that the free preschool for all has been passed here in Portland, like what do you see the local moving forward, the local work moving forward, and how it's been affected by COVID?
Yeah. Oof. Well, I'll try to keep it short for very big question. It kind of broke my heart a little bit when the COVID crisis started, in the thick of like this really, you know, expansive, beautiful time of organizing. But you know, when the crisis hit, we had just won our union election. We had all this momentum, and we were able to keep organizing, because, you know, once you win your union election, you have all of these rights that you've won that other early educators don't have. So we were able to keep going on our thing and creating our model, but it really knocked down our ability to help other teachers as effectively. That said, the conditions people have had to deal with under the COVID crisis have been like very heinous, because preschools have basically been open the whole time. And anyway, I could go on and on, but I won't. But we've continued to organize. You know, the terrible conditions can sometimes galvanize organizing, but it's really been awful. And I'm really glad for the support that other early educators and I have been able to give each other across many schools and types of work. And it's going to continue. Like, this is a really important underorganized field, and it's going to be great. And yes, the Preschool for All measure passing really puts something awesome on the horizon. It's better wages and funding, better accessibility, for families. And they go hand in hand. The organizing, the Preschool for All measure is just going to strengthen organizing. And
do you have any idea or details on how it's going to start being rolled out locally?
Yeah, because the measure that passed ended up being a merge between the Universal Preschool Now measure and the original Preschool for All measure, some of the details that that I was part of helping put together for the Universal Preschool measure have changed in the merger. So there's some things that are unclear and some things I have a pretty clear understanding of, but it's going to start rolling out through going to be need based, like families in like highest need are going to be receiving the like funding first, and it's going to roll out that way, family by family, which is different than what I was preparing for. We had set it up so it would be school by school that would get the funding. So I'm not really sure what that's going to look like, but I can report back as I continue to learn more.
And we will gladly be here to air the report and be part, of a learning more. This is incredibly insightful. I hadn't realized that, preschools have been open through COVID. I don't understand how or why, and it's beyond me. And I'm happy that this seems like the type of thing that's like a clerical mistake type of thing, where it's like you try to renew your passport and you can't because it's a letter off, and now all of a sudden you're like wanted by the FBI, and it's like, wait, no, this is a huge mistake, we have to remedy this. So it's great to see that there are people actively remedying this, and the Portland Child Care Labor Alliance. Nat, thank you so much, and it's been a pleasure chatting with you. Before we wrap it up, I want to ask Althea, Sonia, any last questions before we wrap it up?
I have one quick one for you, Nat. If listeners are interested in learning more about your work, what's the best way for them to do that?
Yeah. If you are on Instagram, check out PDX Child Care Labor Alliance on Instagram. And also, Growing Seeds Workers Union is at GS Workers Union on Instagram. You can also find Growing Seeds Workers Union on Facebook. But those are pretty central places where you can get in touch. And if you are a child care worker interested in organizing, go to that Instagram, or I'll just say email us, pdxcclaboralliance@gmail.com. We would love to have you.
Thank you so much, Nat. It's been fantastic speaking with you. Keep doing your thing, and I can't wait to see you shine. Thank you so much for all your hard work and for this interview.
Thanks for having me, everybody.
Oh, and of course, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Take care. That is it. Thank you so much. We are going to be moving on, just playing a little midway song. This is The Gap. I'm Tammy, and the line is Althea. And when the studio is Sonia. We'll be right back.
Will somebody wear me to the fair? Will a lady pin me in her hair? Will a child find me by a stream? It blooms to spread love and joy, faith and hope to people who know inside every man lives the seed of life. If he looks within, he finds beauty and power.
So nice. Little mini Ripperton here for you. I'm the Gap. How are you, Althea?
I'm good. That song reminded me, there's like a portion of it that went viral on TikTok, and there's this terrific TikTok video, which I will post to our webpage, kbu.fm/thegap, if anybody is interested in checking it out. But it's this person, and it's that song playing, and it's such a tranquil song, you know, like you just sort of, you feel good when you listen to it, but it's pitch black nighttime. They've got a baseball bat and they're going to hit a wasp's nest on a garage door. And then it cuts right out as they start running away. I don't know. That's what got me thinking about. Smack the wasp's nest to the sounds of Minnie Riperton.
Wow. That is, as Sonia said, grown folk music. So just, you know, just a reminder, we're grown folks here. that sometimes, you know, just apparently are, you know, watch videos of people hitting wasp nests. Is that what was happening?
That's not a grown folks thing, though.
Offline.
Yeah, we don't have to go into that.
We're going to have to dissect maybe that think one.
Yeah.
Speaking of dissecting, I'm the segue queen over
frog.
There.
last part of the show is going to be about frogs.
No. It's not. We're going to get Pete upset. We're going to get me upset.
No.
I'm an ethical vegetarian. We're going to take that one offline, too. That's just an invite for harassment. But yeah, I, you know, New Year, here it is, you know, got to have the you know, the quintessential howsy-doozies. How was last year? You know, literally hindsight 2020. But Sonia had a really awesome idea of, well, Sonia, you go ahead and you introduce the next segment.
Oh, all right. We invited listeners a couple weeks back to share things that they'd learned over the past year, particularly under quarantine, you know, people looking for ways to occupy themselves, occupy their energies, an outlet. And so I was thinking, hey, like, looking back, like, it was around solstice time, like, there's a solstice tradition that my friends and I have engaged in the last few years of giving voice, like, intentionally, like, letting go, talking about what we're letting go of from the past year, and also what we intend to do with the coming year. And so you, dear listener, we're asking you, what are you letting go of? And what are you intending from your, well, respectively, from the past year and for your coming year?
Beautifully said, Sonia. Beautifully said. I love that. And listeners can call in at
503-231-8187.
I forgot. I'm always going to say my own number. Go ahead.
Don't put out your own phone number. 503-231-8187. We would be very interested to hear what you've got, what that brings to mind for you.
Well, in a sense, it's my phone number until 9.
You won't be calling Tammy directly. You'll be calling. What'd you say?
I'd say for the next 12 minutes or so, it's my phone number in a sense. So
yeah.
503-231-8187. Give Sonia a call. And she'll put you on the air.
Give me a call.
Yeah, get you on the air. I'd love to hear that. That's so beautifully said. I'll let you tend to the phone, Sonia. And, Althea, I would love to hear your letting goes and your intentionalities.
I really appreciate the framing because I think that, you know, this is a time when people are like, oh, what are your resolutions for the new year? Like, what are you going to do different? And I don't know. I think 2020 was a year of both dramatic change and speak for myself on an interpersonal level, like life slowed down a lot, you know? So it's sort of like a weird balance of those two things. I guess my intent, and so for that reason, this is my own personal habit, which is that I don't, I like in New Year's resolutions, I try to keep them kind of abstract and not like, I don't know, something that like 2 months from now when I stop, inevitably stop doing some kind of daily practice, that I don't, you know, have the February blues of like beating myself up about it. It's like, you didn't journal every day, you're a bad person now, I think, and this year is ruined. So I tend to keep mine kind of flexible and vague. I mean, my intention for 2021 is I want to go swimming more. I didn't get to swim enough last year.
That's nice.
Yeah, that's my intention. What am I letting go of? I don't know. I feel like I have a goldfish memory these days. I don't remember literally anything that's happened. What about you, Tammy? Is there stuff that comes to mind? Yeah, I don't know what's happening with. I don't have like. I mean, I guess this is a good time for reflection, you know? It's like, what have I been up to that maybe I should cut it out? I also kind of intend to, like, do more to, like, improve my living space. I think spending a lot of time there has led to some sense of complacency for me. And it's like, oh, I have, like, stuff that I haven't hung up, and, like, oh, the shoes in the entryway, gotta clean those up. Need a better system, you know? And that could be something to carry forward and improve my life in a material kind of way.
Yeah, well, you know, your environment affects you, and you reflect your environment. As above, so below. As above, you know.
Mm.
For 2021, my intention, I want to let go of getting angry, because I hate that feeling. It's just so, I don't like it at all. And I want to reserve it for when it's actually necessary, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to be experiencing that as often as I do, which in order to do that, I have to be like intentional about where I put myself in, like what situations I put myself, you know? Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, my therapist once told me that anger is a secondary emotion.
Oh, exactly,
I've had people debate me on that. I have one friend who's like, absolutely not. Anger is a primary emotion for me, and there's nothing underneath it. How dare you inquire?
Did they get angry?
It's just a different experience. Yeah. But that anger is, like, it's always coupled or based on something else. Like, it doesn't just exist in its own right.
Mm.
That's the thought.
I personally have that's how I do envision it, where a situation, or you know, even if it's just like the situation is making me angry, it's not it's like something about the situation is doing something to me that's making me feel this way. So just intentionality in that form. I want to maintain a bunch of good habits that I've crafted. I'm very happy with like vitamins, you know, since the Rona has been raging, I've been taking more, taking vitamins, and I've been doing it. And I intend on keep things like that up, little things that mean the world, at the end of the day. I wonder, Sonia, have we got any callers?
Lines are wide open at 503-231-8187. For another 6 or 7 minutes, you can call and share what you intend to let go of from 2020 and what you intend to create or manifest for yourself in 2021.
Beautifully said. I love that. Sonia, would you like to take that on until someone calls or something?
Oh, me? Oh, well. One thing I've been always like...
I just whipped out a squirrel. A whole list.
All right. Now, I intend to... Well, I'm trying to... What I'm releasing, I found myself being a lot more conscious of ways that I've internalized things that aren't about me, you know? And so, like, being more conscious of... I'm going to start releasing that... that tendency you know, to like allow things to have, allow things that have nothing to do with me to just be what they are and not and you know,
love that
and not have to take it on because it's not about me. It's not my problem and I don't have to fix it.
It's like, and the farm, they say, not my pig, not my problem.
Okay. Not on the farm I was involved with, but that's all right.
It's a black farm. It's different. You know?
Okay.
We do.
Okay.
We have our own slang.
Dig it. And, I mean, so an intention for what I'll be doing, I mean, there's, I think I kind of inverted my intention of letting go of things that aren't about me into a letting go of the tendency to make things about me that aren't about me.
Goes both ways.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's different, but the same. Yeah, it's inverted. Yeah.
Hey, if we're gonna be wearing uniforms, we should all be wearing something different, man.
That's my next tattoo. That's okay. I love that. That's words to live by 2021. Boom. That's fantastic. That's truly amazing. And we have about 5 minutes left for the program. If people do want to call in, give us your intentions for the upcoming year and what you are letting go of from the last year. Yes, please, because I was just going to say my own phone number again. I don't know what's going on with you this morning.
503-231-8187. We would love to hear
your phone number. It's suspiciously close, that's why.
Don't say that. I like hearing from both of you just because I feel like that also kind of informs things that I wasn't even necessarily thinking of that I could, that I can value that I've like done this year, which is I have like built better habits for myself in some ways, and that, you know, can carry that forward and can let go. Recognizing is like almost the hardest part, because once you realize that it's not about you, then it's like, okay, I understand. But sometimes that sort of like mechanism of understanding isn't quite there, at least in my experience.
Yes, definitely in a acquired tool that you learned along the way, and I think humility is a big helps out a lot with that when you get humbled real quick, you know. Which is what, like, I think, you know, part of growing up also, it's just the fact that we all went through this thing together, and not just, you know, you and me, or just Portland, or just Oregon, or just Pacific Northwest. It's like a global thing that we all experience, and I think it humbled us a lot. It's like when you look at the night sky and you realize, oh, I'm just like a little speck in the universe, and now it's like this big overreaching thing. I think humbled us. So maybe a tad bit, maybe not, you know. I think one way or another, though,
I think you'd be hard pressed to find somebody who's like, no, we should have a big head about this. Let's talk about how well we've done.
Well, you know what we did find?
New Zealand can.
Sorry,
go ahead.
I found...
Shout out New Zealand.
Well, a little closer to home, I found Derek, who would like to share his intention for the coming year. Go ahead, Derek, you're live.
Hey, all. Thanks for the conversation. Hey, Tammy. Really appreciated hearing from Nat and wanted to call in and say it's either super deep or not deep at all. I think for me, for 2020, I want to carry everything forward. I like that Nat said, make interesting mistakes. So it seems like even the hard stuff I want to take with me and learn from. And then at the same time, if possible, take nothing forward and start off with as close to a clean state as any human can do. So I just wanted to share that and say thanks for the show. It was really good to hear it.
Thank you, Derek. That's fantastic. Interesting mistakes. Talk about a cool band name. That's teachable moments and interesting mistakes. That's I like that. I like that.
Yeah.
Good pairing.
Well, I think that like energy of like, well, what can I do to be the kind of person that I think is cool and interesting? Mm-hmm. And part of that is making interesting mistakes.
Living in the awkward, as they told me at the at an orientation for Greenpeace when I was 20 something.
Thank you, Derek, by the way. I don't know if we said it.
Here's one I've heard that I think is a really good one for, you know, setting one's intention for a new year is be the person you needed for someone else.
All part of the hero's journey, I tell you. Look at us. This is, look, we're really hitting off 2021 on a good start. It's been great to work with you two, and I look forward to making interesting mistakes with the both of you and the rest of the community at large, because it's really been interesting, enlightening, and I feel like, yeah, like you said, Elfie, I feel like I'm getting to know a part of me within both of you and listeners. You know, it's really,
yeah,
really awesome.
Totally. We are just about out of time. Thank you so much to everyone who listened. Thank you to Nat for talking to us earlier. Thank you to Tammy and Sonia for everything. Yeah, this is In the Gap, KBOO Portland. We will be back next week, yeah?
We'll be back next week, but next week, and we are here. We made it. Thank you all so much for tuning in.
Estás escuchando KBOO Portland por el 90.7 FM y transmitiendo en línea a través de kboo.fm.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of